Ja, gute Woche. We'll continue the theme we've been working with the last couple of weeks of what we've been calling Sugyos in Tanakh, discussing connecting ourselves to either figures or periods of Tanakh and seeing what we get out of it. And what I want to do now is talk approach a specific period in Tanakh, which we touched on a few times, which also perhaps sheds light on the broader approach that we're trying to take here. What is the general idea of learning Tanakh, serving ourselves for Tanakh? What is the purpose of Nach? It isn't, in order to understand what it is, let's first say what it isn't. It isn't about the historic information. I mean, that's a very specific part of it, but it doesn't, it's very far from beginning and ending with that, because actually, one of the most ubiquitous phrases that you see throughout, particularly Lachin, and also in other Sfarim, plenty in other Sfarim, are references to the chronicles of history that were being recorded by Jewish writers at the time. If you want to know more about this, see the chronicles. If you want to know more about this, see, in other words, see the history books. See the history books. In other words, that's not what the Navi was. I don't know where those books are now. I suppose that they got lost together with plenty of other things from antiquity that got lost. But there was, you see, throughout the Navi, that there was a, sorry, that there was a regular process of recording the chronicles and recording the history. The Navi was there to do something else. The Navi was there to give the word of the Navi on the matter. Let's take that, just make that point also. To record history, you didn't need a Navi. By and large, the Jewish people were literate. Why did you need a Navi to do that job? But right there, the point is that the purpose of the Navi was to give the perspective of the Navi. And this is why Taka says that we had 1.2 million Nevi'im, Chazal tells. We don't have that many Sfarim of Navi. Chazal tell us that the Nevuos that were relevant, that were needed for all of posterity, those are the ones that were recorded. In other words, these were things that held lessons for us, held things for us to connect to. Those are the ones that were recorded. So here is why I want to start developing the picture that we're trying to create. And this really is going to be the background of everything else we'll be discussing about the Tanakh periods. If you read Navi on a regular basis, and like just like, as I say, simply understood, you don't get the impression of a positive reality. You get the impression, like we said last week about the Dor HaMidbar, you get the impression of constant problems, constant contention, almost like the Navi is frustrated with not being able to get Klal Yisrael onto the track that they ought to be. Now, it's important to realize that this is a very surface level understanding of what's happening here. And I'll just illustrate it from a couple of angles, and then we'll see what the purpose of the Navi actually was. For example, in Sefer Shoftim, you see that there was a good period, and then again problems started. With the pattern being, the Jewish people dropped in their loyalty, and then Hashem brought another tzara, and then again they did tshuva, it didn't last very long, another tzara, etc. And you get the picture of basically a people who couldn't get it together. But if you also notice, if you really want to paint a picture of what was going on, there's an awful lot of reading between the lines that you have to do, because the Kisvei HaKodesh is very not generous in words, very sparing in its words. And there's a lot of reading you have to do between the lines. And this is where you need Chazal and the great authorities from the subsequent generations to come and help fill in that picture. But if you read Navi, if you read Sefer Shoftim, I just want to give two examples that of the between the lines. In between the Parshiyos, you see these psukim that say almost offhandedly, okay, there was this whole incident, and the Navi describes it in detail. And then afterwards it says, Vatishkoy ta'aretz arba'im shana. And then things were quiet for 40 years. And then the next incident. Now, We know that when there were problems, the Navi spoke up. If it says that then things were quiet, it means that everything was fine for those 40 years. Now, Avigdor Miller pointed out that if you actually go and add up the years, you see that oh, and then everyone was quiet for 40 years, for 20 years, for 60 years, which don't get any attention. They're mentioned in a very quick passing in the Navi. If you add it up, you see that those were actually two-thirds of the period of the Shoftim, which already gives you a whole different picture. When things were fine, the Navi was quiet. There's no need for him to talk. It was a different kind of chinuch style. They spoke up when there was something, when there was a problem, and they spoke up in the harshest terms. This is what we call old-fashioned chinuch. And this is really the shift we need to make from all those expressions, all the accusations, all the castigations were not frustration. You have to switch that all with the word chinuch. It was chinuch, and it was old school chinuch, very old school chinuch. That wouldn't work for our times. So that's just in terms of the quantity. You see that when everything was quiet, you didn't hear from the Navi. But I just want to give another example of how to relate to the things that we do actually see expressed by the Navi. I'm going to quote one pasuk. Pasuk that says, see if you can identify where this pasuk is from. Well, I know where it's from. But pasuk says, I'm going to read the pasuk. Pasuk, here are the words of the pasuk. In the words of Hashem, Chata Yisrael. Yisrael has sinned. Right? This sounds like, man, we have not many nevuahs to this effect. Chata Yisrael, Yisrael has sinned. Gam avru es brisi. Right? They transgressed my covenant, asher tzivisi esam. Gam lakchu min acherim, gam gamvu, gam kicheshu, gam somu bekleim. They took things that they shouldn't have taken. They stole, they lied, they hid things away. Does anybody know what the context of this pasuk is? I'll tell you what the context of the pasuk is. But this sounds like a classic smashing accusation. Klal Yisrael has sinned. Right? They transgressed my bris. They stole. They lied. The context of this pasuk is in Sefer Yeshua, after the battle. What?
Hi.
After the battle of Ai. That's right. After the battle of Ai, what happened there? One person secretly, there was a command that nobody should take any of the spoils. Nobody should take any of the spoils. One person secretly took some. Now let me ask you, if you have an army of whatever the number was, actually there they used a small number of warriors. Sorry. No. That was an Ai. But in Yericho, back in the battle against Yericho, when they had gone to fight against Yericho, they had been told nobody takes anything from the spoils. Okay? Now what happened? One person took. If you have an army where the entire army, nobody took anything, one soldier took something, I think most armies would be able to hold that up as a badge of honor as to the discipline and the integrity of the army, no? What happens here? When this one person secretly did this. So the next battle, the Jewish people lost. There were a much more than expected number of casualties, 36. And the accusation is scathing. The Jewish people have sinned. Okay, right now we're not going to get into why it was said that way, but we're just pointing out the style of the Navi. The style of the Navi is to come with very, very tough, broad, sweeping, harsh accusations for what we would call tiny slips. If we're talking on a national level, this was a tiny slip that was responsible for it. Why? Why was this? So, right now, in a broad way, The purpose of Nevuah and the Navi was to bring Klal Yisrael to the most perfect of levels, to extract from them absolute levels of excellence. And in fact, part of the reason we don't have Nevi'im today is because we wouldn't be able to handle them. This is what we saw. Toward the end of the first Beis HaMikdash, the people became less and less appreciative of the messages of the Navi. You think of it today, when it's all too common, right? Rabbanim have to know their place. Don't say anything that will make the people upset because you'll have an uprising on your hand. So, what would we do with a Navi? So, we like to think, oh, if we'd have a Navi, it would be different. No, it wouldn't be different. It wasn't different. In the early days, in the great days, when the Navi came with a harsh accusation, the people lowered their heads. We saw that last week. We saw one example of that. As time moved on, and as things started moving downward toward the end of the first Beis HaMikdash, we see that people are just completely resentful of the Navi and they're persecuting him and oppressing him. We didn't see such phenomenon in the early days. Question.
So, is that really the fault of the people? I mean, take our generation. Like, you have to do what's going to work. And if yelling at people and banging them over the head is just going to be counterproductive, then there's no point of doing it. But I don't know, it's the fault of the generation. You're born into this generation.
That's why I said that this is old chinuch. This wouldn't work today. Today, yes, you need that combination. And there's no question that today, no question, when we're talking about chinuch as in children, when we're talking about guidance as in the generation, you definitely need the much softer touch. Well, at the same time, we can't do away with people who are willing to say things as it is. Otherwise, standards just completely fall apart. And I'm talking about that, even that little element of it is so hard for people to handle today. But it's true. In the old school, people grew from it, and people became perfect from it. And Klal Yisrael was an excellent nation as a result. And Hashem was very pleased. I think I mentioned this last week. I think we mentioned this last week, right? About Parshas Balak, where Hashem expressed his pride in what he made out of his people through that very tough, harsh approach. This is what the people of old were able to handle. We know even today, it wasn't so long ago that Chinuch was able to be tougher and have good results. And yes, people became weaker, but, and therefore the approaches do have to change. But going back to those times, the way the Gra puts it is, the purpose of the Navi was, like, it says, like a kala. When she's getting ready for her wedding, and she asks you to look at her face, how do I look? She doesn't want to hear the compliments now. She wants to hear if you see any speck. That's what she wants to hear. But she doesn't want you to tell her you look beautiful. No, before she leaves, she wants to hear that too. Yeah, fine. Okay. But before she leaves, she wants to know if there's a speck on her face, right? And if there is, if she looks in the mirror, that's how it's put down. If she looks in the mirror and doesn't see anything, she'll take a magnifying glass and look even closer because she wants to have that perfect appearance. This was where Klal Yisrael was at that time. And the Navi was there to find the specks and blow them up. And then they would rub them away, and then the Navi would start looking for even smaller specks. Someone was about to. Okay. Now, this was how Hashem produced out of Klal Yisrael a nation that defied human nature and operated at what we would consider supernatural standards of excellence and of perfection. This was the story of the Jewish people back in those days. And I know this sounds surprising because when you just read through the Psukim, it sounds like everything but that. But this is part of why we're doing this now. It's to put together a picture of what was really going on and to appreciate that this is for exactly as you said, when something is not going to work, it has to change. That is exactly why Nevuah stopped. Nevuah continued for as long as Hashem felt that the benefits were being achieved. But once it reached a point where it was getting less and less and less, because yes, that is the way it works. As time goes on, resolve weakens, etc. And then Hashem said, okay, we're going to have to stop with Nevuah at this point. And people are going to have to grow through other means. And it's not going to be as, we're not going to have the same levels of the same standards.
Here's another question. So they wrote all this down in this very harsh manner. And it obviously wasn't written down for the people who heard it because they heard it. It was written down for the generations afterwards who fell, who couldn't hear such stuff if it was spoken to them directly. So how is this relevant to
How
us?
is it relevant to us? So that's exactly what we're trying to accomplish now. We're trying to bring ourselves to a place where we can connect to whatever extent possible to the reality of those days and be affected by it. Be affected by it. And this is what we're trying to do here. It's not an easy task, but if we can actually connect to the immense standards of those days, we'll be broadening our own horizons. We'll really be connecting to the magnificence of what Klal Yisrael really is, to the grandeur of what the olden times were, and to appreciate. What is the level? What is the character of the nation that we're really shaykh to? That itself should have the effect of stretching our own horizons and, yes, putting us in a greater place. The higher the ceiling, the more room you have to grow, even if, yes, you're going to remain at a distance from those standards. And that's exactly what we're trying to do. So here is when we go back to the Dor HaMidbar. And this is, as we discussed last week, the way the Kuzari puts it down is, right, we know about the 10 times that they angered him, right? So we spoke about that. So the way the Kuzari puts it is, now I would love if at the end of my life, someone would say that I sinned 10 times, right? The way the Kuzari puts it is, great is the man, HaGadol, great is the person who you can count his sins. Meaning, who's greater? A person about whom you hear that he sinned 10 times or a person who did a mitzvah 10 times? Right? So that's the Kuzari. So this is the perspective we have to have. HaGadol, when he talks about the ego, we're not going to get into the discussion of the ego now. It could be that we did it once in the past. The ego, which seems like the worst of all sins, and Hashem keeps waving it in our face. The lashon of the Kuzari is, it was an avera that was magnified because of their greatness. And then he goes on to say, and great is the person whose sins can be counted on two hands. So now, let's appreciate this. Let's appreciate that, yes, Hashem was, through the Navi, was extracting excellence, was raising people to standards that, as we said before, the Jewish people, when they were looking ahead in the Midbar and seeing what Hashem expects of them, they said, as I'll express this, this is not realistic expectation of human beings. But basically, Hashem's approach was, and this was Hashem's response to them. You see this also expressed in Gemaras. You don't know what a human being can be. I know. You don't really know what your own potential is. I know. I'm going to apply my very rigorous and tough godly program. And I'm going to show that a human being can be so much more immense, that you can be so much more immense than you would imagine. And this was the process that Hashem was doing with the Bnei Yisrael in the Midbar, was epitomized in the Midbar and continuing throughout the generations when we actually had Nevuah. And still goes on until our time on a smaller scale. But that's the reality of it. Let's take a little bit of a look at the Dor HaMidbar through the picture that the Kuzari paints. I want to stress that when you just go through the psukim, pasuk by pasuk, understanding each pasuk in and of itself, so you are, how do we say, kind of like micro-focused, right? It's not giving you a picture of the big picture. And many of the mefarshim operate in that kind of way. It's one pasuk at a time, and the Kuzari steps back and like we described, does the reading between the lines, puts together the Kabbalah of Chazal to paint a bigger picture. And this was a picture that in the later generations, they put more effort into developing in a much broader kind of way to put together the pieces. So let's look at the picture that the Guzari paints of the Dor HaMidbar. Dor HaMidbar, right? Like we said before, you look at it, simply understood, it's like this was just failure after failure. And the Gemara already discusses it. There's an opinion in the Gemara that says the Dor HaMidbar have no chelik le'olam haba. When you just read the Psukim, it seems like a natural conclusion. Dor HaMidbar, they lost their share to Elam HaBa. But the conclusion of the Gemara is a very sharp rejoinder to that. And the Gemara comes back and very sharply rejects that approach and says, no, they were a dor shel chasidim. They were a generation of people who are extremely devoted to Hashem, and about whom it says, in fact, the lashon of the Gemara is about the one who said, "Ein lechilik lo mabod." We're talking about all the greatest of chachamim here. So Rabbi Yochanan came afterwards and said, "Shamke lechasidus," the one who said this dropped his usual piety. We have to be use these expressions with care, but he's bringing out very sharply that the surface level perception of the Dor HaMidbar has to be rejected, has to be upgraded. And the conclusion of the Gemara is that they were a Dor Shel Chasidim, they were a Dor of people who were extremely devoted to Hashem, and about whom Hashem says, "Is fully Chasidah Kroseh Brisei Zevach," which we translate that pasuk. It translates approximately as follows: "Bring close to me my devoted ones." That's what the word Chasid means, my devoted ones. Those who established my covenant over a karba. Rabbi De Mille explained what is the meaning of that pasuk in this context. The Gemara brings it in to describe the Dor HaMidbar. It means that they served as the karban for the establishment of the Jewish people according to the standards Hashem wanted. Hashem dealt with them very harshly in order to take that Dor that came out of Mitzrayim and to make from them something so excellent that that would be the foundation, the core. Of what Klal Yisrael would then go on to be. And yes, they suffered as a result. It was tough. They even lost their lives for it. And therefore, Hashem says, in the next world, bring them close to me. These are my closest circles, because these are the ones who were chosen for the role to be sacrificed on the altar of establishing Klal Yisrael correctly, establishing my relationship with the Jewish people correctly, demonstrating standards that otherwise would have been thought of as unattainable, beyond reach.
If he had really refined and perfected them, why did they have to all die and not go into Israel?
Why didn't they go into Israel? So you know what? Let's see if we'll get to that now. Or you know what? Maybe I'll say it in one brief sentence now, even though it really deserves more attention. The people who left Mitzrayim were born into a material reality, right? They knew normal life in Mitzrayim. When they came to the Midbar, they moved into a reality where you depend on Hashem in a very, very keen, open way for breakfast. It's not every day's food. So it's a little bit of a precarious reality for a person who is used to being on so-called solid ground to live with. And how any drop brought harsh punishment instantly. What happened to the Meraglim, this was the dynamic of what happened. They were, to an extent, looking forward to coming to Eretz Yisrael and being back on firm footing, on solid ground. Like not to be living, the Midbar was a place that did not sustain life. And any slip, they knew it was just such a precarious existence. It was very difficult to live with. They wanted to be back in a place where we have walls, we have grapevines, we have fig trees, etc. Life is normal. And of course, we have to be doing mitzvahs at a high level. Hashem said, that's not the people I can bring to Eretz Yisrael. I need to bring P into Eretz Yisrael. The founding generation of life in Eretz Yisrael has to be people who live with the Midbar mentality, who live with the reality where that's right. Your only protection is Hashem. Your only source of sustenance is Hashem. There is no such thing as ground foot as solid grounding other than being grounded on Hashem. And that's why Hashem said they rose to immensely high levels of the Dor HaMidbar, but they couldn't break past that extremely high level of people who came from that material place and were able to completely move into Midbar reality. Therefore, it had to be the next generation, the children who were born into it. All they knew was Man. We'll call that al regel achas. But coming back to the reality of those people who didn't make it, the reality of the Midbar, the way the Kuzari lays it down, he says it was a reality of closeness that was never equaled again in history, of closeness with Hashem. First of all, the way he points out, he says, "You talk to me about this Avera, about that Avera." He said, "What happened the next morning after all these Averas?" They woke up the next morning and the Man came down. And the Nanei HaKavod were there. All of those special touches of divine affection were still there. That's right. There were harsh punishments, but those harsh punishments were coming in a setting of extreme closeness. There weren't harsh punishments coming in a vacuum. There was that reality that Ananiah covered, which meant that Hashem was kevyechol carrying them, cushioning them. The man was Hashem spoon-feeding them kevyechol. And within that setting, that didn't change. Within that setting came those harsh punishments. Because as we said, this was not frustration, it wasn't vengeance, it was chinuch. And it was a very loving, harsh chinuch. Both coming together. It was a very loving chinuch, a very close chinuch, and a very extremely demanding chinuch. Now, what was the reality within the Ananiah covenant? So let's appreciate that there was never a period when the Jewish people were all concentrated together in such a small area. An area that could basically be, you could walk easily from one side to the other. It wasn't such a long distance. The whole Machaneh Yisrael, all 2 to 3 million people, if you just take the cheshbon in a simple way, concentrated in that area and basically constituting one big Beis Medrash. There was no, the material, there wasn't much material affairs that needed to be tended with. People didn't need to work. Someone asked me, what were the men, women busy with? The men were busy learning all day. What were the women busy with? What were they busy with?
Raising their children.
That's what they were doing 24/7. That's right. My grandmother, who lost her family in Auschwitz, one time heard from her. She barely spoke about what was then and what was before. But one time heard from her describing her family before that. She said, "We never knew this." It was close to the end of her life. She said that she came from a very wealthy family in Romania. And she said they had a whole team of maids. One of the cousins who was sitting there said, "What did your mother do all day?" She said, "What'd she do all day? She spent all day with the kids. You're the kids, don't you do all day?" That was the reality in the Midbar. But what were the men doing? The men were all part of one Beis Medrash that encompassed the entire Jewish people. Never had such a thing after that. And what was going on in that? They were learning Torah all day. That was what they were busy with. And Moshe Rabbeinu was there in this Medrash as the one to answer questions. And what happened when Moshe Rabbeinu didn't have the answer? Kiviyachol Hashem was part of this Medrash too. This was something that after the Midbar that stopped. Halachic questions could not be taken back to Hashem from that point on. After the Jewish people came into Eretz Yisrael, the system was halachic questions are not answered by Hashem. You put it through the process of the Chachmei Yisrael, figuring it out. But in that period, which was the laying down the foundations for what was to come, that was a very unique period where Hashem said, "Yes, bring the questions to me." Now let's appreciate what the significance of that was. The significance of that was that Hashem gave a Torah shebiktav, the Chumash, right? The Chumash cannot be applied into real life. This is very fundamental to understand. You're going to try to take the Chumash as is and say, "I'm just going to live with it. Why do I need the interpretations, etc.? I'm just going to live with it as is." Are countless, countless, countless examples of things that you just wouldn't know how to apply, right? Tefillin. Everybody knows what a tefillah is. Very not clear. The arba minim. Two out of the three are just said in such vague terms. You have no idea what plant it's referring to. Pri Eitz Hadar, beautiful fruit of a tree. Go figure out what that means. There was never a dispute throughout history that it means the Esri. Anaf Eitz Avos, a braided. Braided branch. That's Hadassah. Should have been some sort of dispute. There's never a dispute. It was always very clear through the accompanying Torah Shebaal Peh. Mila, you should cut off the foreskin. Where's that? So many things, if you really just try to take it and apply it as is, there's no way of navigating it. The Jewish people took that Torah in the Dor HaMidbar and they had 600,000 Jewish minds, which are not known for being intellectually inadequate. 600,000 Jewish minds who were intensely applied for 40 years to breaking down and analyzing every pasuk as it was given over. Any ambiguities were addressed, were worked through, and by the time the Jewish people entered Eretz Yisrael, they weren't carrying a Torah shebiktav alone. They were carrying a Torah that had been worked through by 600,000 strong for 40 years intensely. Every possible ambiguity was addressed. broken down, debated, and whatever couldn't be figured out was actually taken back to Hashem, and they actually came in with the interpretations of the Torah as given by Hashem. This is the significance when we talk about Torah Shebaal Peh. This is the Torah that they carried in with them to Eretz Yisrael. The Torah that came along with that full processing, that plowing that it went through for those 40 years by those 600,000 strong. And now they entered Eretz Yisrael with a Torah that was ready to be applied. Every possible configuration was debated and figured out. Every possible ambiguity was debated and figured out. This was the nature of reality in the Midbar. And as we said, there was never a time when Klal Yisrael was so closely concentrated together. There was never a time when you had everybody in one base medrash learning under that one Rebbe. Who was that one Rebbe? Right? Actually, it wasn't one. It was Moshe. Then they heard again from Aaron, and then et cetera, et cetera. It was a whole process. And where the one at the end of the day fielding the questions is the one with the capital one, right? Is Hashem himself. This was the how Hashem laid the foundations for the Jewish people. This is what they call in yeshivas the Machzor HaMiyasdim, right? The founding shir, right? The one who are setting the tone and the launching pad for everything that's to follow. After that, things had to change. After that, Hashem said, "I don't give answers to halacha questions anymore." Now, like we say, right, the famous Gemara, it's not in heaven anymore. Why is that? Very profound, straightforward reason. Once it came into Eretz Yisrael, once Moshe Rabbeinu is not on the scene anymore, we want to preclude any possibility of soothsayers, of people coming with a vision. I had a dream, and Hashem told me that this has to change, that has to change. Hashem said, from now on, the rule is anything that makes it through the fine-tooth comb of the Chachmei Yisrael, good. If not, person comes and said, Rabbi said, I had a dream, and Hashem told me X, Y, Z. What do the Sanhedrin tell him? Well, prove it. Prove it from a Gemara, prove it from a Tosfos. If not, take your dream and go back to sleep. This is what ensures the integrity and the continued pristine nature of the Torah throughout all the generations. No such thing as one person, as great as he might be, coming and saying, well, this is how it's supposed to be. You have an allowance for a one-time deal. That, yes. A Navi who's already an established, known Navi can come and say, I got an instruction that on a one-time basis, this has to change. But as far as the Torah that's meant to be perpetuated for the generations, absolutely no such thing. It has to go through the critique of the full body of the Chachmei Yisrael. They're not a gullible bunch, and they're going to put you to the grind. If it doesn't make it, it's rejected. No matter what kind of signs you show, that's how the Torah said it should work. You ignore the signs. The one sign is that it has the approval, the haskama of that body of the analytical, critical Chachmei Yisrael. So this is just, again, giving us a picture, a little bit of a perspective with which to work when we'll be approaching more of the figures and periods of Tanakh. I'm going to stop the recording quickly before my battery dies. Okay.